Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Let me be clear, Florida's justice system does not work without corrections. Our law enforcement can make effects, prosecutors can bring charges, judges can issue sentences, but none of it matters without a secure correctional system that enforces accountability. Our correctional officers are the ones who ensure dangerous criminals stay behind bars, court-ordered sentences are carried out, and public safety is protected.
Completely agree. Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins was here yesterday in Santa Rosa at the Correctional Institute. That's a state prison, not the county jail, even though I know it's easy to misunderstand the two. Typically, the rule is that anybody who's got a sentence for more than a year and a day or more goes to state. Anybody who is a year or less and they go to, you know, county, just if that helps. There's about 80,000 people in the state system. There's about 53,000 or so in the county system across the state. So we got about 135,000-ish people in our various forms of detention right now, including even some of the federal, which is more like, I think it's like 10,000 or something like that for the feds. Actually, it's kind of interesting if you look at our numbers as a state. Where do you think we fall in the grand scheme of states, John? Are we at the high end, the low end, the middle end? Where would you think Florida is? We have approximately 700 per 100,000. Now, that's a year old. That's from June of last year. But that's roughly what we've got.
I think we would fall in the middle.
Yeah, we are right in the middle. A little bit on the high side. The low end of this spectrum is places in New England that are more in the like 250 vicinity, Rhode Island, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, New Jersey. Then places that are a little bit higher, Minnesota, Illinois, and Washington are all in the 300s. Then you start, New York, by the way, is 317, which is fairly low by comparison. Now, you might attribute that to that being such a massive population. You might attribute it to being, you know, lax enforcement. I don't know, but I'm just telling you the numbers. California is around 500. Oregon's around 500. A lot of states in the, scattered across the U.S. are in the 500 range. We're at 700. Texas at 750. Arizona's at 710. New Mexico's at 647. So all in that vicinity. The highest number is, you want to take a guess, John?
California.
No, I just said they're at 500.
Oh, sorry.
They're better than we are. I mean, lower than we are.
Texas.
Texas is 750. Louisiana is your winner of the bad prize. 1,067.
Really?
Yeah, so that's 1% of the population
right.
is in some kind of incarceration. 1%. Here it's about a half a percent, a little more than. Mississippi is 1,000, so that's also 1% of the population. Alabama is 900. Georgia is 900. Oklahoma and Arkansas also right around the 900 range. And Kentucky, same, 900-ish. So just as an FYI, and yes, we are high compared to a lot of other countries also. I'm not drawing conclusions or, you know, anything. I'm just telling you kind of what the facts are in case you were curious about it. But back to Jay Collins. He's exactly right. We have a kind of a weird, I don't know, disconnect a little bit, I think, because most people, or maybe it's just people I hang out with, whatever, believe in law enforcement, celebrate cops and the sheriff's deputies and FBI investigators, and we believe in that, and they're, you know, they put their life on the risk, on the line in order to protect my family, and I appreciate that. That's good stuff. We like that. That's great. And they want pay raises, I'm generally in. You know, they want better equipment, I'm generally in. Corrections officers, you want to spend more money on jails? You know, most people, I think, are like, but not that. Well, I am, because I think that you got to have good jails and you got to have professional corrections officers in order to handle the inmates that the police arrest and the state attorney prosecutes and the judges convict or the juries convict. Like, you have to believe in all of it or you can't really believe in any of it. So it's not sexy. It's not exciting. It's not typically a political, you know, it's not an election winner to go say, I want to spend more money on the prison system because it's falling apart. It's just people would rather hear about teachers. They don't want to hear about COs and jails. They want you to fix their schools and their roads. They don't want you to, you know, and build airports. They don't want you to, you know, I mean, I know it's federal, but still, you know, they want you to do that stuff. They don't want you to spend money on prisoners. Well, but you have to. So as adults, I appreciate that he comes to town and talks about the importance of it. And that means a pay raise.
His recommended budget includes $373.9 million in vital pay raises for FDC certified and support staff statewide. That includes raising the base pay for correctional officers, probation officers, and inspectors from $22 an hour to $28 an hour. This is not just about compensation. It's about readiness. It's about stability. If we want safe institutions, we have to have a stable workforce.
And you have to have professionals, and you have to enjoy going to work, and you have to run it like it's a good business, and that's exactly right. So we have to put our money where the mouth is. He's exactly right about this.
In order to do that, it takes more than just words. Simply put, it takes deeds. If we want to keep dangerous criminals locked up, if we want and need strong officers on front lines, then we have to put our money where our mouth is, and that is exactly what Florida has done.
Good, and also budgeting for more staff, same thing.
The governor's recommended budget also includes $56.7 million to add 500 additional full-time security positions statewide. That means more staffing, more coverage, and stronger security inside our Florida institutions. It means safer working conditions for officers and a stronger ability to maintain control and order.
Yeah, and by the way, that inside the jail security, this is, you know, making sure to discourage contraband, which is a matter of safety, both for the inmates and also for the people who work there. I mean, all of these things are important. Again, I just think that for a lot of folks, it's kind of a cognitive gap where they don't think that's all that important. And I love what he said at the end, too.
To our men and women in corrections across the state, thank you for what you do. Thank you for your dedicated service, sometimes with hard pay, sometimes with hard conditions, always with an incredibly hard job. We appreciate what you do. We appreciate who you are. Thank you for being on that front line and keeping our people safe and keeping our families able to live their American dream. The state of Florida has your back. We must ensure we always have it as well.
Amen. Validating them, showing them that we care, saying that we care. You know, there's two ways to say that you care. There's to say it, and then there's also to pay it. You know, and they're doing both, which is good. It's an important mission, and I read in this his military background that, you know, this paramilitary is the way we talk about law enforcement, corrections, all that kind of stuff, and because they're sort of like military in a way, that's what para means. Anyway, so his time, you know, in the service, I think, brings out this idea that you got to make the troops feel good about what they're doing. That's an important part of morale. That's an important part of getting, you know, people enjoying their job and feeling significant in it and doing it well. Because the person who doesn't feel appreciated and gets paid typically doesn't do a great job. Even the person who doesn't get paid all well but feels appreciated will often do good work for you. You know, you get better productivity out of people who feel important in what they do. We'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
That's right. I-10 eastbound, there's still an accident we're dealing with. It's actually between exit 10A and 10B. So if you're trying to go south on Highway 29, you should stay in the right-hand lane to get to exit 10A. Good advice. Thank you for the heads up on that one. And traffic is actually backed up way past Pine Forest there, so be aware of that. Also, Highway 90 coming into Pensacola, about a 10-minute delay in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
And I know we say this a lot, but there's always somebody who doesn't know it, okay? Lights on, not high beams. And if you need to go slow, put your flashers on. It is legal to drive with your hazard lights in Florida now. It used to not be for a long time. There's people who grew up in Florida, and forever it was not legal to drive with them. And so this is a change, and it's important to know the change. Also important for you as a driver, if you see somebody with their hazards on, they might be driving. They're not necessarily parked. 437-1620, 437-1620. Got a couple of good texts in here. Somebody says, Andrew, thank you for talking about corrections. It's not flashy. We're tucked away, hidden from the community, but we play a pivotal role in keeping the community safe. Thank you for spending some time on this issue. Absolutely. You're totally welcome. And, you know, it's not something you see a lot. You know, they're not running around the community the same way police, and, you know, it's different. And we tend to forget about them kind of because we want to. I mean, nobody wants to think about jail and prisons, but on either side, either the people who are in there or the people who are, you know, employed there. Somebody else texted in, my brother was a CO for 2 years before he became a deputy. He said being a CO made him a better deputy because he learned how to talk to people to de-escalate situations. Now he's a prosecutor and credits his CO training for his interactions there, too. 100% believe that.
That's awesome.
It's just like the stuff we're talking about with Eric Winstrom, and his background makes him a better cop because he understands the, you know, the family of the incarcerated, because he understands the trying to go after bad cops. Same thing. All of the, like, variety of experience. And boy, I tell you, if you can learn to deal with inmates, you can learn to deal with anybody.
Anybody.
So that's a good note. All right, back to Jay Collins, who was here yesterday in Milton, talking at the Santa Rosa Correctional Institution. And there's always something. It's never just the facts, ma'am, right? Okay, you ready? You ready for this? Okay. You want to do the drama part or the funny part? Probably the drama. Let's get the drama out of the way.
Let's do that, and then
we'll end with the funny.
Funny.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So he got asked kind of an odd question.
I understand County Commissioner Terry Smith was invited to be here today. He is not here. Was there something that...
So County Commissioner Kerry Smith was invited to be here today, I understand, but he's not here. Is there a reason? And that might seem to you like a weird question. It is, but let's let him answer.
I'm not sure. I don't know the schedules. I'm sure that in the scheme of things, there's probably a schedule issue. You know, we move at the speed of government sometimes, and schedules shift, so I'm sure there's no issue here.
Well, let me tell you what happened.
Oh, boy.
Because I do know. Kerry Smith, and I do not know how many other commissioners, were in fact emailed an invitation to come to the thing. Which makes sense, because they're the local elected officials, and you would think that if the lieutenant governor's in town and the sheriff is there, and, you know, they get invited. That's a normal thing. Then, at least Kerry got an email that said, some things have changed, and you don't need to come anymore.
What?
he got disinvited. And I think Colton Wright also got disinvited with an email that says, after all, never mind.
You know what? I would have shown up
anyway.
You don't
need to come.
Yep.
It's no big deal. Now, I don't know, because I haven't read the email. I'm sure it's public record. I mean, it is. It's an email. When I had first heard this story, I thought maybe they got told that the event was canceled. The event was clearly not canceled. The event definitely happened. So then you're wondering, why would they invite them and then uninvite them? Or semi-soft uninvite. They didn't tell them they couldn't come, but they told them they weren't needed. By the way, Kerry had written a speech because he thought he was going to be asked to speak. Because you get invited, you think, maybe it's my district, maybe I'm going to get asked. So he wrote a little 4 or 5 minute thing just in case. And then it was right when he was finishing that up that they sent him the email, said, never mind.
Wow.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so why? Well, since it's such a weird thing, I'll give you my best guess. My best guess is that the attorney for Kerry Smith in his lawsuit against Ed Henry for defamation, if I remember correctly, related to political advertising, the attorney that's handling that case is Alex Andrade. And you know, DeSantis and gang, word choice and purpose, do not like Andrade. And so my theory is that somebody, a low-level staffer, thought, oh, well, let's invite the local officials. Somebody slightly more in tune with the governor's current level of pettiness realized, uh-oh, Kerry Smith is friendly with Andrade, and we don't want to have none of that can happen here, so let's I mean, what's your answer? I don't have a better answer.
I feel like I'm in kindergarten.
I know, right?
You can't come to my sandbox.
So, you think I'm joking about this. You know, did I ever tell you the James Uthmeyer story? I haven't told this story.
No.
You know, remember when all the Hope Florida Foundation stuff was going on and it was hot in the news? And all of a sudden, it just seemed like James Uthmeyer was doing a bunch of press conferences to promote good things that their office is doing. Let's get out there and change the news. Let's brag about and. It almost seemed like they would invent things to do so that they could have a press conference talk about the good thing they were doing. And I do not remember the particular one, but there was one of those, and one of his press guys had called me and said, hey, we'd like to get the attorney general on the show. And I'm like, great. What is it going to be about? And he said, well, it's this thing. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, I just want to, you know, let you know that if he's going to come on, we're definitely going to have to talk about the Hope Florida Foundation stuff. And also, just because you may not realize this, and I don't want it to be a surprise. This is how I do things. In case you don't realize this, you might not want it to be a surprise. I have Alex Andrade on every Friday. He's a good friend. And, you know, I just don't want that to be some secret that you didn't know about. I got a follow-up email. We've had a change in schedule. And,
yeah.
You know, the attorney general is not available anymore, and we'll get a hold of you in the future. You know how many times they have called me since then?
Zero. Zippo, zero, nada, nothing.
Now, I did meet AG Uthmeyer, General Uthmeyer, at the sailing thing for American Magic. I mean, it was like a hi, I'm Andrew McKay. You know, okay. You know, I mean, I didn't talk to him or anything, but it just, you know, Anyway, so fun stuff. The political pettiness is just everywhere. It's so crazy. Wow. It is so crazy. Not only at the state level, by the way. There's all kinds of stuff all over the place. Oh, I don't have time to play the fun one.
Why? Do it.
Okay, fine. All right. This was.
I mean, I waited.
All right, here we go. This is another question that caught it. In his. I'll tell you in a second.
Coming from a hard job world, being in the military for 23 years, when we were talking with the people earlier, the corrections officers, I understand what it's like. You know, it's why I released them out of formation so they can go back about their life. Those small things matter. Understanding the nuances and having done hard things, both as a young soldier and then senior, as a leader, these things matter. I understand that it is so critically important to me because when the rubber meets the road, everything in our state, everything in our communities, everything in our homes starts with safety. And the sheriff is the belly button. He is the leader in the community and somebody that we need to know completely so we can provide him what he needs to protect our most valuable and precious commodity, and that's our people.
The sheriff is the belly button. And he had said that phrase earlier, I forget, in reference to somebody else, called it the center of the thing.
Right.
Which, so then when they were all kind of done doing the official press conference, then one of the reporters actually followed up. I think it might have been one of the Channel 3 girls. I think. I'm not sure who it was. But anyway, followed up with this. Pay attention. This is funny.
Well, I appreciate y'all being out here.
Thank you. I've never heard the sheriff being the belly button.
Well, the belly button of the community, right? That's it.
Is he in here or out?
Oh. Well, you gotta ask him. That's a private question. I'm not going to jump on that. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
That sounds like something I would have said.
I know.
The belly button of the community, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Is he an innie or an outie? Well, that's more of a private matter. You'll have to ask him. I don't know. It made me laugh.
We should ask our sheriff that.
I had a full-blown belly button laugh. All right, John Pickens has got traffic on the fives.
Still dealing with the accident that happened on I-10 eastbound between exit 10A and 10B. And if you're trying to go south on Highway 29, you should stay in the right-hand lane. And you can get to exit 10A that way. Seeing some more delays, Highway 29 southbound approaching 9 Mile Road, 12-minute delay, and Highway 90 coming into Pensacola, experiencing a 15-minute delay. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
It's so disappointing to hear people use the name of God flippantly. Ladies and gentlemen, God is not your homeboy, and he's not the man upstairs. His name should not be used to express your stress level. Isaiah 6 says that God is holy, holy, holy. The word holy means set apart or sacred. He's holy God the Father, and holy God the Son, and holy God the Spirit. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. May I humbly suggest to you that you think twice before you devalue the name of the One which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell, but instead I urge you to reverence His precious and wonderful name.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Why'd I go to the doctor? Working on the farm, my heart kept skipping a beat. I didn't think much of it, but my daughters made me get checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
After a storm, portable generators are a helpful, temporary solution until power can be restored. Remember, 20-20-20 to keep safe while using a generator. Keep your generator 20 feet away from your house. Wait 20 minutes for the generator to cool down before refueling. Purchase a $20 carbon monoxide detector to protect you and your family. For more tips on hurricane safety, check out the Hurricane Guide at floridadisaster.org/guide.
Don't you hate it when you wake up and feel like you already missed something important? The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9, News Radio 92.3.
Informative. Well, Dwight Evans parked a couple homers, the Sox won, and by day's end, poor Ben had become one of God's most pathetic creatures, a Red Sox fan. Somebody save your soul, cause
you've been sinning in the city. Oh, I got a text, and somebody says, in the military, it's a common expression, which would make sense for Jay Collins, the belly button.
Oh.
As in, when things go sideways, who can I poke in the belly button and demand answers from?
Oh.
Okay, all right, interesting. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
And now the armpit of news with David.
There are worse things to be.
That's true, there are. So Homeland Security officials are headed to Capitol Hill today, Andrew. Representatives from ICE, Border Protection, and Citizenship and Immigration Services will be in the hot seat when they testify before a House panel. The hearing comes following the two fatal shootings in Minneapolis. And Kid Rock says he caught some of Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show Sunday, and he said, maybe not a surprise, it wasn't his cup of tea and he didn't understand it. But he also said it looked like he had a fun dance party. So if you wanted Kid Rock's reaction, there it is.
I had been waiting all this time.
I knew you
Me
were.
Too.
Just for that. All right, and now we turn to the earlobe of news, Fox.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump says it's his economy and it's doing very well, but even he knows voters can be finicky during the midterms, telling Fox's Larry Kudlow.
Now we have the hottest country anywhere in the world. That's said by everybody. We have the hottest country in the world. I guess I have to sell that because we should win in a landslide, and we'll do everything we can to do it.
You can catch the rest of the interview on Fox's Kudlow, 4 p.m. Eastern on Fox Business. A critical moment passes.
The deadline for that so-called or alleged ransom expired yesterday. Our understanding is the family did not pay out. So that really makes you wonder whether the ransom note was ever legitimate, whether it was actually tied to the suspect or suspects.
Nancy Guthrie's been missing for now 10 days. That's Fox's Matt Finn in Tucson. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. It's a foggy start to our day. We've got 55 degrees right now. And, of course, we'll get to our full forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's up here in just a few minutes. The developer behind the former OLF 8 site in Beulah says major changes are needed if that project is going to move forward. Chad Henderson, who's overseeing the redevelopment of the 165-acre site, is asking Escambia County to keep the ownership of the property instead of selling it outright, some of the ownership. Henderson says keeping the land government-owned could make the project eligible for more state funding, money that would help cover the cost of roads, utilities, and other infrastructure needed to attract employers. He's offering about $15 million less than the original $42.5 million purchase price. County Commissioner Steve Stroberger says it's unclear whether the board would be willing to accept that deal, especially after years of negotiations and public expectations tied to the project. Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson says a recent rash of car break-ins highlights a growing problem across the state. About 25 vehicles were burglarized in Santa Rosa County and the Milton and Gulf Breeze areas. Johnson says all those vehicles were unlocked. His deputies caught both groups of juveniles responsible.
You know, we go to the sheriff's conference and, you know, we all discuss stuff like that. And it's pretty much all the way from Pensacola to Key West. It's the same thing in every county. You know, you got these juveniles that parents aren't tending to them, and they just go out whenever they want to and stay out for as long as they want to, and next thing you know, they're breaking into cars.
And Johnson is urging residents to lock their vehicles and remove valuables. In one of those cases, a firearm was stolen from an unlocked car. All of the suspects are now in custody. In Miami, a judge is hearing arguments on whether Anthon Reagan should face the death penalty for killing a 10-year-old boy during a nail salon robbery. Defense attorneys argue the shooting of Aaron Vu was not planned and say it doesn't meet the legal standard required for capital punishment.
This case in and of itself does not rise to the level of extreme depravity for which the death penalty was intended.
Reagan has admitted to the robbery but waived his right to a jury for sentencing. Prosecutors insist the crime was intentional. Defense attorneys describe the shooting as being chaotic and impulsive, not premeditated. The judge ultimately will decide whether the case qualifies for the death penalty or not. Meanwhile, the CEO of Silicon Ranch is responding to growing concern over a massive solar farm plant for rural Stockton. Reagan Farr says the company plans to purchase 4,500 acres with solar panels to be installed on about 2,000 of those. The project would generate 260 megawatts, roughly, of power, primarily to supply electricity to a new Meta data center in Montgomery. Well, in Escambia County, Alabama, a Flemington High School student fighting for his life after a crash on Friday on Highway 31. Flemington Fire Chief Steve Stanton says it might be one of the worst he's seen in his career. School Superintendent Dr. Michelle Collier says the district is working with state officials to improve safety near the school. It's 7:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. If you're on I-10 eastbound, still dealing with the accident that happened between exit 10A and 10B. So be aware of that. Traffic is backed up almost to 9 Mile. And Highway 90 coming into Pensacola, traffic is actually backed up all the way to Woodbine. So just be aware of that. That's about a 30-minute delay. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 forecast.
We are going to be seeing mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 72 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. Going to be looking at a chance of some morning fog for that Wednesday morning. Then by Wednesday afternoon, partly sunny skies, 20% chance of some stray showers, high near 71. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 56. Going into Thursday, mostly sunny skies, high near 69 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 55, we've got a dense fog advisory until 9 o'clock. Our next news at 8. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Tesla's Raj Jagannathan, who spent 13 years at the automaker, has announced on a LinkedIn post that he's leaving the company. Jagannathan's most recently was vice president of IT, AI infrastructure, business apps, and information security. President Trump has threatened to bar the new $4.7 billion bridge connecting Detroit and Ontario from opening. Trump cited Canada's ownership of the Gordie Howe International Bridge, its refusal to stock some U.S. alcoholic beverages on Canadian store shelves, Canada's tariffs on dairy products, and its trade talks with China. Shares of SoftBank Group Corporation jumped over 10% after its telecom arm raised its full-year profit outlook. Revenue for the first 9 months of SoftBank Corporation's fiscal year rose 8% from a year earlier. Futures are slightly lower. On Monday, the Dow Industrials gained 20, reaching a new record high once again. The NASDAQ up 207. That's your money now.
Are you tired of old arguments that go nowhere? Are you looking to transform your relationship? Local to the Gulf Coast and nationally recognized, relationship coach Julie Nice has helped over 8,000 people turn conflict into clarity. Julie brings empathy, practicality, and proven strategies that create lasting change. From rebuilding trust after betrayal to leading through listening, Julie's programs reset the way you connect. Visit outcomesonly.com today because better communication means better relationships.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Check out the Mardi Gras fun this weekend. Friday night, rolling at 7, downtown Pensacola will light up with the crew of Lafitte Mardi Gras Illuminated Nighttime Parade. Saturday afternoon, beginning at 2, catch the Pensacola Grand Mardi Gras Parade in downtown Pensacola. And Sunday, it's Mardi Gras Island Style with the crew of Rex Parade on Pensacola Beach beginning at 2. Laissez le bon temps rouler. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
You don't stop needing information just because you left the car. That's why News Radio 92.3 goes with you.
On your phone, on your computer,
wherever you are. Stream us live or download the News Radio 92.3 app. Stay connected to local news, breaking updates, and conversations that matter even when you're not near a radio.
And that's a good thing.
It's News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative. Local. Dependable.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
everything in our state, everything in our communities, everything in our homes starts with safety. And the sheriff is the belly button. He is the leader in the community and somebody that we need to know completely so we can provide him what he needs to protect our most valuable and precious commodity, and that's our people.
All right, so before we get into any of the important stuff, I need to find out from Sheriff Chip Simmons, do you feel like you are the belly button of the community?
I don't think I've ever heard the belly button. And I know on Stripes, Sergeant Hulka was the big toe.
Yeah, there you go.
And our big toe. Yeah.
But I don't the belly button? Is that what you really said?
That's what he said, yeah. Okay. Somebody told me it was a military thing. That it must be. The person you can poke in the belly button and say, I need answers on this, you know, like that kind of an idea. I don't know. The person who's responsible, ultimately.
Okay. No, if that's their tradition, I think I'll let them go with the.
So, obviously, that's not the important stuff of the day, but I thought it was funny. Made me laugh.
So, the Army has the belly button and the Navy has the navel? Is that kind of where we're at? No?
Oh.
Where's my symbol?
Wait. No. You 100% have earned this now, sir.
Boo.
That is a two boo from Jonathan Green. Well done, though. It was good. It was clever. I like it. You know me. I laugh. It's funny. All right. Jay Collins was here, and he was talking about corrections. He's talking about funding for COs, funding for infrastructure, funding for security inside the jail, all of that stuff. I'm a big advocate. For years, our state prison system has been underfunded. This has led to dilapidated facilities, even some abandoned facilities, underpaid COs, I mean, all of that. So they're remedying that. You, of course, know a lot about this. Your experience as sheriff, you ran the jail as the deputy county administrator for a while after you were the PPD chief. So you've got that same kind of, you know, experience of the other side, experience of, you know, the results of law enforcement, which I think is a very telling thing. It's a great thing. But, I didn't know if you had thoughts about this funding issue or raising pay and, you know, building facilities or remedying them.
I'm always going to be in support of raising pay and treating your first responders correctly and fairly. But every time I hear about it, I'm thinking, well, what are you doing with the local jail? What are you doing for the municipal jail? I'm wondering what this is going to bring the state corrections to and what the county corrections officers are to. And I know that the fiscally constrained counties throughout the state of Florida, they get a stipend from the state to compete with the highway patrols and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. I don't know the answer to this. So my question, though, is do they do the same thing for local? Here's my question. And I know many of the people here in Escambia County Jail, right, in a local jail.
Yeah.
And I just hope they're being addressed as well. That's great. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and doing a good job. And I applaud it. And I'm glad because I also know a lot of state corrections officers.
Yeah.
And it's not just corrections officers. It's probation, parole, as I understand it, as well. And the state does a really good job of, I think, the Florida Highway Patrol has gotten raise after raise to 20% and 20%. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult for local law enforcement to recruit. And my fear is it's doing the same thing on the correction side.
I was going to ask you that exact thing because on the one hand, you and I are completely in alignment. You know, the jail is a part of the corrections, the law enforcement process. We need to celebrate them. I think sometimes we have a gap in our cognition that we celebrate, you know, cops and sheriff's deputies, and we don't celebrate the COs, which they absolutely should be the same way. We need to put the money into it. That's not a sexy political thing. That's just it needs to be done. It has to be done. But I had the same exact thought when you were talking through it, is if we're giving them, you know, a $6 an hour raise on start, you know, from $22 to $28 an hour, what does that mean for the employees at the Escambia County Jail and the Santa Rosa County Jail and, you know, all your county jails? Just like if you suddenly bump the pay for FHP or FDLE, that means that some of your deputies are going to be like, hey, what about us? Or PPD is going to be, hey, but what about us? And this kind of escalating price war for law enforcement labor is not good for anybody if the taxpayers are continually having to fork out more and more money for it. I'm not against any of the pay raises because I want to see you guys get your due, but, you know, they're now playing one against the other, and, you know, that's not good. It's like churches getting their growth from some other church down the road.
I can tell you that when we worked on our three-year deal with the Board of County Commissioners, my chief of staff, Whitney Lucas, and I went to them and said, this is why we need more money, because FHP is set to get this much money. Mm. PPD is set to get this much money. We hire more than any of those, both of those combined. And if we can't match that or exceed that, then we're going to be, you know, the citizens of Escambia County are going to ultimately suffer from that. And to their credit, they did a really good job of saying, okay, we agree with you. We want a safe community. We want to make sure that we treat our first responders correctly.
Yeah.
I guess my point is, when I heard that, I always, yeah, but what are you doing for our people? What are you doing for our county people?
Right.
And they may be working on something. I'm speaking probably out of turn, but I think to bring attention to something and that's on top of your mind, to use your words before we got on here, I think it's always important. Again, as a former corrections officer, as chief corrections officer, we need people that can watch these people,
yeah,
and take care of these people and make sure that they stay in that building, and so I think that's important. And I'm sure smart people are working on this.
Well, and you know, it's a lot of money they're putting into the pay raises and the hiring of new staff, and I just hope I'm with you. I hope that there's a part two coming where they're putting some kind of, you know, statewide help for the locals. Where, I mean, they're literally going to be causing this problem as they're trying to take away property taxes.
It's
and all
already
the other,
a problem, right. in my mind. They're
just
gonna
by
make
announcing
it worse.
It. Right.
I'm not saying the state corrections officer shouldn't get money. They certainly should get the funding. But again, I think that they couldn't there be some coordination? Hey, you're giving your people, and I'll be honest, when I was a police chief, we would talk a lot with the other cities and the counties and the sheriff's office, what are you going to get? What are you going to get? And we would be honest with each other because we knew that if one entity got a 20% pay raise, it was going to really devastate the rest of us.
Yeah.
And so that's why, a lot of times we talk a little bit. And
this is a 30% pay raise. I mean, I'm not quite. It's close to 30%. It's 22 to 20, 28. $6 on 22 is almost 30%. That's a huge, for starting, that's a huge.
I guess I just don't know how the local communities, the local board of county commissioners can hang with that.
No, it's a great question. I had not been thinking about it until you said it, so I appreciate you bringing it up. We're talking to Chip Simmons, our Escambia County Sheriff. I've got John Pickens. That's traffic on the fives.
That's right. I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29 is basically stop-and-go traffic. Expect about a 25-minute delay. And Highway 90 coming into Pensacola is backed up all the way to Woodbine. Expect a 45-minute delay in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, Sean. I didn't mean to dwell on this so much, but I have a follow-up thought for you, Sheriff, as we're talking about this, the pay raise. If you raise the pay, the theory is you're going to get more people come in, but typically it's going to come in at the expense of there would otherwise go to, like, the county jail, for example. You're going to get COs leave one ship to go work at the other ship is kind of, if you're not trying to just broaden the pool, then you're not solving the problem because we have a aggregate need for so many corrections officers across every level of jail, state, federal, and local. And if all you're doing is incentivizing them to go from one to the other, that's not solving the problem of there not being enough in total to handle the prison population, right?
Right. And I think there's two parts here. One is it's not all about money.
Right.
It is about work environment. It's about professionalism. It's about a standard that you set. It's about having an attractive location where people want to work. We've worked very hard over the last couple of years on making the Escambia County Sheriff's Office the premier, and I can say it because I'm competitive, the premier agency in the region.
Right.
In fact, we just got back last week. We went to Washington, D.C. because they asked us to present on some of the programs that we have here in Escambia County. I think those are very important things. And so it is money. It's about money to a degree, but you have to retain them. You have to keep them. You have to broaden your pool. And really, we're not recruiting in New Hampshire or California. We're recruiting right here in Escambia and Santa Rosa County. And our thoughts are is if you want to be a part of this team and you see what we do, you see what we look like, you see how we train, you see what our the opportunities are, then come to the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. And it's done very well with the Sheriff's Office. I'm not.
You're flush. You have more candidates than you need.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily complaining on my behalf. I'm complaining on our fellow law enforcement officers. The corrections officers, and it's not really a complaint; it's more of an observation and a question.
Let's
consider them as well.
And I would say that, and you guys show this here is, if you think that money is the solution to all these things, it never will be, and that shows the problem because the real problem is culture, professionalism, values, treatment of employees, which there a slice of that is money, but money's never the big issue for that stuff. And if you can fix the other stuff, then you solve the problem. So I totally.
And since you got me on a roll here, I'm leaving here and I'm going to go talk to our new hire class. We have our own academy, which also is another thing. And my first thing is to say thank you for choosing to be at the Escambia County Sheriff's Office. And then I will to show them, this is the picture that I'm going to paint to you. This is your career. You can be here, narcotics, on the boat team, SWAT team. You do all these things. And, you can retire here. and we're a family here, and you live here, and you work here. Your families can be raised here. It's getting safer and safer by the day, and man, you're lucky to be a part of our team.
I love that. That's good. All right, let's switch gears a little bit. We've had
you're done with my recruiting spiel.
Oh no, I mean, because it's not just about sheriffing. It's all kinds of other things as well, and that's why I thought it was valuable to keep talking about it. We've had a couple of incidents, and of course, we had an absolutely atrocious incident. I don't want to talk about just yet. Before, just quickly, Chief Winstrom, you've had a chance to talk with him, have you had a chance to talk with him?
Yes.
And obviously, I wasn't going to ask you what your thoughts were beforehand. I mean, it's just not appropriate. If you wanted to say something, you could say it. And so now that he's been selected, all on board, seems like a great candidate. What your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, anytime you meet someone that has similar experiences, quite frankly, he was a police chief, and I was a police chief, and he's worked with sheriff's office. They work in collaboration with their sheriff's office. I just want to make sure that we're similar, you know, and I want to make sure that he understood that we're there, and we work very well together. We work on operations together. We have a couple of their employees embedded in our real-time crime center. I don't anticipate any of that changing. We had a good conversation, but you can't have just one conversation. You're going to have a couple of conversations. You're going to have months worth of that collaborative spirit and conversations and run things by each other. But we've done that. I've done that with every police chief. I mean, heck, I hired another one.
Yeah, I know you sure did. Tommy works for you now, right?
With me, right.
Let's turn to, I guess we're kind of running short on time, and I really wish we didn't have to talk about this story with this child. I was talking to Deanna Oleski yesterday, the medical examiner, and she's like, yeah, it's as bad as you think. It's traumatic just to experience this. Our investigators having to deal with this. What do we know at this point?
Well, she's been charged with aggravated manslaughter. Manslaughter is a death, not necessarily with intent. It can be voluntary or involuntary. You can do a heat of passion, or it can be an involuntary act. What we know is that the night before, her family called us and said, hey, we haven't seen our sister in a while. We're worried. So we get there and start taking a report, just a missing person. There was no concern about anyone else. And come to find out, she had got her car fixed and that the mechanic had talked to her, so that relieved their concern. Someone has talked to her. Someone has seen her. Someone that they trusted.
She's alive, essentially. The mother, yes.
The very next morning, the sister gets some disturbing information, text, communication from her, and which led her to believe that the 5-year-old might be in danger. They contact us, obviously. Now, I'm in a situation where do I do a press conference? Do I just do a post? Do I let people know? And while we're working on that, unfortunately, to your point, someone found a plastic trash bag containing the body of the 5-year-old in it. Now we know what we have, obviously. We have a homicide, and so, yes, I did. I went on there. We didn't set up a time. I wanted the information out because I think it's important for people to know what we're working. So we end up putting her out. We end up catching her, charging her with the death, and we are still working. Just so everyone knows, we're still working. You can't morally, and you can't criminally either, just dispose of a body in a trash bag on the side of the road. That gets me.
Yeah.
Just hearing about what someone has done to a child before, right?
Even if the child passed away from explainable causes.
Right. That's no way to me, that's no way to respect the life of a child. And that's why even on my comment, I said, you know what, someone needs to pause for a second and think about this child. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a preacher, but I'm a man of God, and I think that someone needs to show some respect for that 5-year-old, the respect that I felt like wasn't shown in the way it was handled.
So at this point, you're waiting on the medical examiner's report to know cause of death so that you can decide what to do with the mother. And has she cooperated, said anything? Do you know anything beyond? I mean, I know you will tell us everything you can tell us, but...
No, there's no cooperation. Okay. We are waiting, and we work very well with the medical examiner's office. Mm-hmm. They got right on it to their credit. And again, we all show up at the scene, and we all have our own parts to play in it. And there will be some information we'll get from the medical examiner's office. We did have enough. Our investigators worked throughout the night. I mean, for hours on end, and working with the state attorney's office and making sure that we had this, all of our T's are crossed, I's are dotted. and we were able to bring the charges of aggravated manslaughter, and that put her in jail. And then we're going to continue to look at the discarding of the body, and there may be some other charges that took place beforehand. It's just terribly tragic, and again, I have to say thank you to our deputies and our detectives for doing such a great job.
Was it one of your deputies that found the bag, or was it a citizen?
No, it was whoever's
thinking about this, let alone had to deal with it, it's traumatized. I can't imagine. I really can't.
Well, again, I think that's a good point. People don't really understand. You talked about the medical examiner's office, because obviously they haven't spent a lot of time with the victims.
Yeah.
In this particular case, there was an individual that had walked that area some hours earlier, and then when they walked back, they noticed a bag that had not been there. The bag was over the rail on Lillian, but it did not go into the water. So he saw it, called us. We saw it again. The trauma you're talking about. Who expects to find the body of a child
hanging on the side of the?
It was discarded, and it was on the concrete before it got to the water concrete area. So again, we contact our own crime scene, and obviously work with the state attorney's office, with the medical examiner's office. And to your point, these are images that do not go away when you lay down. These are things that it takes some time, and you have to rationalize these things, and because. You can't understand how it happened or why it happened, right? So your mind's not thinking correctly, because no one should treat a child like this.
Right.
And certainly no one should discard the body of a child like that.
I said it again, I hate to have to talk about this stuff. It's atrocious. But I tell you what, it does give me an opportunity to think about, we can be praying for anybody who knew her, the whole community, be praying for the officers, your deputies, for the MEs, for everybody who has to deal with this, because it's... And for the person as well.
Well, the extended family was concerned that they did call us when they first got word that the child might be in danger. So, again, we need to obviously consider what's taking place with the extended family, cousins, and whoever else would have known this child.
Well, Sheriff, I hate to end at that point, but we are completely out of time. Sheriff Simmons, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for walking with us through the lighthearted and the horrific things that you guys have to deal with. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Let's see here. If you're on I-10 eastbound between 9 Mile and Highway 29, you're going to see maybe a 20-minute delay in that area. Also, still dealing with Highway 90 coming into Pensacola. Is almost backed up all the way to Woodbine, and it's just crawling. No accidents there, just congestion and the fog. So make sure you have your headlights on this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
This is Pastor Carl Gallops of the Hickory-Hammock Baptist Church in Milton, Florida. Are you and your family looking for a church that when Sunday morning rolls around, you can say, oh good, it's time to go to church? Well, let me invite you to consider worshiping with us at Hickory-Hammock Baptist Church, where multiplied hundreds of people say these very words every Sunday. We are doctrinally sound, featuring the exaltation of Jesus Christ and the clear contextual preaching of the Bible. And the Bible is made relevant and exciting. You're convicted, challenged, encouraged, and uplifted at the same time. We have premier youth ministries, children's ministries, senior adult ministries, Bible studies, and missions outreach. We have a team of pastoral counselors offering guidance for your Christian and family life. You can find out everything you'd want to know about us on our huge and highly interactive website at hickoryhammockbaptist.org. Let me give you an open invitation to worship at Hickory Hammock Baptist Church this Sunday morning. And then the next Sunday, you'll say, oh good, it's time to go to church. I kid you not, regular members and even first-time guests say it every single Sunday.
ZZ Top, the big one. April 2nd, Sanger Theater, Pensacola, Florida. Playing all their classic hits. ZZ Top. On sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
So, what did I miss today?
Good question.
I'm Andrew McKay.
Chris Bryan.
Austin Price.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Well, there you have it.
Good. Good morning, 7:58, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News in our dense fog advisory till 9 a.m., and it's better now, but it's still pretty rough out there. So headlights on, drive carefully. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, Andrew. Today's show co-host Savannah Guthrie's mother remains missing today. This is now after the deadline to meet a purported ransom demand came and went Monday. Authorities say no payment was made as of 5 p.m. yesterday. Nancy Guthrie was reported missing from her home February 1st after not showing up at a church service. Homeland Security officials are headed to Capitol Hill today. Representatives from ICE, Border Patrol, and Citizens and Immigration Services will be in the hot seat. They'll be testifying before a House panel. Of course, this all coming after the two fatal shootings in Minneapolis.
All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Again, it's dense out there with the fog. Be careful driving around. We have an advisory until 9 a.m. And, coming up next hour, I've got some very nice tickets for you to win.
Local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most. News Radio.